cow, there's a story for you, right? Delivering pizza, you get kidnapped.
Oh, yeah, that sounds, it's amazing. It sounds fictional. Yeah. It's so dramatic.
I mean, I'm glad he's okay, but there you go. I mean, if all the Domino's pizza guys, they're all sitting around talking about different things, and then the guy's like, yeah, well, I got back of the car. Oh, my God, you're the guy, right? He's got that. No one can take that from him, Tom.
You live for the story. You wish it happened to you so you could have another story.
I mean, hold on. I'm out here in the wilderness, Tom. The people can come by.
Let's not encourage them. Here.
Well, as long as you let me go after an hour, all right?
That's right. Maybe they could start your equipment for you.
Good. There she is. H. Scott.
Hello.
Hannah Scott. All righty. Hey, this is a fascinating story. I love when all of a sudden the people rise up and go, hey, look what we've got. We can get a bunch of signatures on a piece of paper and bypass the knuckleheads.
That's exactly what's happening here. This is a large group that some might call generally competing interests to some degree that have come together. They've been planning this for a bit. They are called the Compassion Seattle Group, and they are going to offer a charter amendment. It's a citizen initiative, but a charter amendment that would essentially bypass the city council and say, look, this is what you need to do, city, as far as responding to the homeless crisis because of frustrations that things haven't been done. Aaron Goodman with the Soto Business Improvement District is part of the alliance.
For too long, our city has allowed this problem to continue to get worse and worse and worse. And Seattleites have been told that it's an either or choice, that you can be supportive and compassionate to the people living on the streets, or you can expect to be able to go into your park and have it clean. And I think that's a false choice. I think we can do better, we can be bolder, and that we can work on a plan that does both.
Now, here's what the charter amendment would do.
Requires the city to, in a dedicated fund behavioral health services, produce additional significant number of additional emergency and permanent housing units. It requires the city to expand their crisis rapid response capability, to, you know, further invest in diversion programs for people that are cycling through without resolution. And it also requires that once these services are available, that the city has a commitment to the parks and the people of Seattle to ensure that those spaces are available for use by the general public.
And when she says that more beds and more permanent supportive housing options would need to be there, it requires specifically 2,000 additional of those spaces. And it also has the more crisis response units. Those are the not cops, but kind of different programs where you're seeing more mental health, behavioral health people respond. And here's the idea there.
We have a small version of this now with the city's Health One, which is operated out of the fire department. There has also been a lot of conversation at city council about creating a service provider-based program like a CAHOOTS or a STARS. The charter amendment does not prescribe one over the other, but just that we need to be looking at a different response for people that are having either a mental health crisis or behavioral disorders in public, and that we need to have a different response.
So is this essentially a vote of no confidence for city leadership?
We need to work together. I mean, it's not specifically at the city council or the mayor, but what I hear from my ratepayers is that they don't feel like the city is moving in any direction and that the status quo is the plan. And so, you know, too often I have spent a lot of time advocating for my district, for Soto, around these issues. And often the response I get is, well, what's your plan? What would you do? And, you know, it came time for a bunch of us to get together and say, okay, well, what would we do?
And that's where they came up with the plan. They filed this today. She says the group conducted a poll early on and found 71% of Seattle voters favored this plan.
People in Seattle want a compassionate response and they want something done. And so we have to figure out a way that gets at the heart of the issue that people are experiencing in their neighborhoods, but then also make sure that the people who are living on the streets are provided with best options possible for getting off the street. At this point, that concept is extremely popular with Seattle voters, that we can do not either or, but and. Yes, we can support the people living on the streets, and we can ensure that our sidewalks and right-of-ways and park are clear of encampments.
So I asked her that afterwards. I said, because Dave Ross asked me this every day, when are you going to get the tents off the sidewalks? That's what Dave always asks. And so I asked her, I said, are you telling me this is going to do it? It's going to clear all the tents and everything off the sidewalks and the parks. And she said, you know, that's a big lift. This is a charter amendment, but that's the ultimate kind of down the line goal. But she stressed, you know, it took years to get into this situation. It's going to take a minute to get out.
Okay. So we like about this, Tom, and I like the fact that you have. It's two groups that are normally not sharing the solution. They both see the problem. Nonprofit comes at it from one side. Businesses say, hey, this is a problem. So they come together. Let me ask you about financing. So if the charter amendment passes, and they need 30,000 signatures. So then they say, okay, we want you to be able to have housing and do this, and that's going to cost money. What's the power of a charter amendment to actually direct dollars towards a budget line?
This would require that Seattle use 12% of its existing general fund. This is based on what they saw in the 2020 budget for this purpose, for all of these things. And they say that they think they're confident that they've got what they need to do. They're just not spending in the right place right now.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. I can imagine that. They could do this all the time. I remember taking driving lessons, and the guy on the right, my driver instructor, he had his own steering wheel and his own gas and his own brake, right? Amazing car. And you'd be driving along, and you'd be not doing well, and he would just sort of take over the car. So are you telling me the people of Seattle occasionally could bypass the children that are the elected officials and just start to do this type of charter amendments on a variety of different topics?
If they can gather the signatures and get the, you know, organization like these guys have, then they could. And is that a good idea for everyone? I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know what you end up with.
Yes, for the people that are in there now, it's a vote of no confidence. That's what you said.
Yeah.
So.
Yes. Well, that's what I asked. Brilliant. I didn't say. But Tom has questions, I can tell.
Yeah. John and I talked a bit about this. Yeah, I love the idea that you have the Downtown Business Association working in concert with the Public Defenders Association person, Lisa Dogard, with United Way, with Chris Gregoire, with all these. I mean, you've got all these out-of-office civic leaders, I think, as a way to kind of put it, representing all these different formats. And they've managed to come up with a single format that they think will work. And I'm cheered by that. However, I'm all positive. I think this sounds great. The question is, how is it going to work? And for all of our dismissing of the city council for being incompetence or whatever, 12% of the general fund, how much is that? And is that more than these individual council members or individual nonprofits or whatever would be spending? Because I would love to think that if by adding just 2,000 housing situations, that we could solve the problem where we have, what is it, something like 7,000 homeless people in Seattle? I'm not sure how that works.
I don't think they're sure right now what the count is, but yeah.
Okay, but the problem is that if this could be the solution, I think a lot of Seattleites would vote for that. 12% of the general fund, how much is that? How much are we spending already? And because by making a charter amendment, that means we have to do that. We have to spend this kind of money. And would that be enough money to move people out of the encampments? Even the people that feel like it's an abrogation of their rights to force people out of these encampments, unless there's a place to stay. If they don't have a place to stay, they don't have to move. We have to get everything, all our ducks in a row before we can move anybody out. That just seems like it's too perfect a solution to be able to pull this off.
Well, the city of Seattle's operating budget is about $6 billion.
Right, a little over six.
So
a little
six
over
billion.
That.
Right. So then you take 10% of that. You get out of there. $60 million is what you end up with. So then is it $60 million or $600 million? $60 million, 10%. Yeah. So for the police, for instance, Tom, they spend $540 million? It's something like that. It's the biggest chunk.
And then it was 400 before there. Cuts.
Okay. And then transportation is part of it. In there, normally it is it falls under the category of like health and human services, outreach, community support. It's all kind of mixed in there. But it is, I think it's normally about 12%. I was surprised to see how small it was overall when you look how much money the city's spending on a whole bunch of other stuff. But the bigger thing is that will it reduce? I look to find out what city's done the best. The best is Houston altogether. They had almost 8,000 homeless. They cut it in half in less than 4 years by doing a thing called Housing First, which we talk about all the time.
Which is what
and
this
Houston
would be.
Said, exactly. So put them in a house, get them the treatment, get them off the street, do what Houston did. Don't do what San Diego did. The difference being, of course, zoning. Houston is like you can build a building anywhere in Houston. You could build a building on top of a building. But here, we really restrict all that sort of stuff. So I wonder if they'd be able to punch through all of the restrictions when it comes to permitting in order to actually start building stuff.
Well, it lists the beds. The options for the 2,000 beds can be hotels, motels, enhanced shelters, tiny house villages. So all of that they can do without the process that you're talking about. And it's what they have been doing during the pandemic. They have a lot of their ducks in a row. On top of that, you know, you'll remember the reason that you have to give the 72 hours notice, declare an encampment, is because of the Supreme Court decision. I can't remember where it is right now, where it was, but it was said you had to do that before you could remove someone from sleeping outside. You had to give them the alternative. That's why this extra 2,000 beds. They're trying to make sure that they cannot be impacted by that court ruling. And they've put a lot of thought into this. And there's our minds. You've got Downtown Seattle Association, right? And then the heads of LEED, all these people who have been trying to independently work with the mayor and the Seattle Council on their own. And one of the things she pointed out to me was the infighting for the last, I don't know, 2 years or whatnot between the mayor and the city council. And it just leads to nothing happening. And then also on the funding, I want to mention that the crisis response units, that's the same type of discussion we've been hearing a little bit at the council, where you take some of those dollars from the police budget because the cops don't want to respond to the mental health calls, right? And you put it over here into those first responders, behavioral health type folks, and do there. And then, you know, you have a cop available should they want it, but not make that the immediate response is the idea.
And John, I heard you kind of dismiss San Diego. San Diego is referenced by them, at least in the article about them, as, you know, something that they saw as a good model. Do you know something about San Diego that wasn't a success?
Just looking how they're doing compared to Houston. My big thing, I'd vote yes, and I'd put my name down. They need 30,000 signatures by June. I would say I'm all right with this as long as you make sure this is for residents of Seattle or King County.
Yeah,
only.
I was going to ask you about that. Yes.
If and you I have people coming in, because we bring them in. They come here because we don't enforce the laws. And if you want to live like a street person, come from all other cities and come to Seattle. People are extremely generous. You can shoot up drugs. The cops don't bother you. You get a great supply of drugs coming in because we're right here on the border. We've got the coast coming in, bringing in lots and lots of drugs from Canada and from Mexico. Come to Seattle and take part in our great homeless program. We'll give you a place to sleep. We'll let you shoot drugs. We'll feed you. Close that down. As Milton Friedman used to say, you can't have guaranteed income and a welfare-supported society as long as you don't enforce borders. We'd have to enforce our borders somehow.
I have two things to tell you. Two things. Yes. One, I'll tell you what I told Dory about this earlier. Once again, the existing problem of people out on the streets and using these drugs and doing all that we've been seeing for so long is not going away. If it ever had a hope of going away, that was killed when the Supreme Court issued the Blake decision, our state Supreme Court, that allows all of the small, you know, amounts of drugs to be legal. There is not going to be a legal fix to that with the knowingly added. That's not going to happen. What's going to happen is more treatment and more funding from the state level for that kind of statewide. But you're going to see these issues and you're going to see those people, just like the guy in the basement the other day who said somebody from Texas sent him here, right? And put him on a bus. That's what's happening. Every time I talk to people in Pioneer Square, that's what I hear when I ask them where they came from, some other state. That is what's happening. But they're here. What are you going to do about it? Unless you put them on, we have a program to put them on a bus and send them back out, which is never going to happen on a large scale. The other thing I want to say is there is a small piece of the currently proposed state budget to start a study group on universal basic income. Just FYI.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, and, good. By the way, then, our last great homeless guy that made the news put all that, put rocks or something in the sock and spun it around and smashed that woman in the face down there in Pioneer Square. He came here from the great city of New York City and came here to Seattle. He's crazy, unfortunately, and homeless. And he's the one that whacked the woman in the face a couple of weeks ago.
So, the difference would be that they have these low barrier places with shelter where you can let these people go. So they're not out there on the street with the rock, with the sock, and doing all of that damage. They're staying where they are because it's that housing first model that hopefully eventually gets them all the way clean.
Yes. And John, so would you then vote against this or not sign it because it doesn't have that restriction of letting people not come here? Because that's not going to be, that's not going to happen. This may be only a half measure for you, but it seems to be a better half measure than no measure.
Well, if it's good and it works, you will attract people. Because whenever you have something for free, people take advantage of it. Washington, D.C. in 2017, as crazy and liberal as that place is, they said, we are not spending our money on people from Virginia and Maryland. We're a little city. We got this amount of money. You've got to show us some proof that you're local. And because if not, you just open up the gates and everybody comes in and you'll continue to say, I can't understand it. We now have 10,000. And last year we had 13,000. We spent $100 million. How does it keep going up? Because guess what?
I understand the problem.
I'm sorry, John. Solution? You're not going to fix the drug problem.
No, but is this, I guess the question is if this is only a half solution for you, is it worth that kind of investment for half the solution?
No, because.
Okay, no, because okay, that's what I'm going to get
more people. More people will come.
But will enough come? Yes, but will more, so many people come that it'll basically, we won't have any distinction between what's happening in the city streets and parks right now or not. If we can clean up three quarters of it and then another quarter come in, we're still getting rid of half of that. It still might be worth the bargain. But, yeah, it's okay. Encouraging, but not panacea.
Okay. There's no such thing. The word utopia means impossible place or something like that. Let's see. Tracy Till, look at traffic for us, please. That is like a big, warm blanket. You wrap that around me, and then a cat jumps on my lap, and I feel all
ready to doze off.
I know, just comforted. No, I'm not gonna fall asleep. Just that comforting. Here comes Rachel. What the hell?
Here I come, baby.
Mayhem. Yeah. I mentioned cat. I knew as soon as I said cat on your lap, immediately Rachel comes in. She loves talking about her cat. By the way, how are we doing technically compared to yesterday? Are you right on the beam with us here?
We'll see. Yesterday, I thought we were cool, too. So, you know, any minute now.
No. Delays. The delays were, like, super, super long. Just, like, cookie,
I know.
Cookie long.
Let's not talk about that. Let's leave the past in the past.
Whoa. You're going to have to go through therapy after yesterday's show. But let's talk about the fact that...
Somebody commented, though, even the worst Rachel Bell segment is still the best thing on the Tom and Curly Show.
That is true. Wow. Arbell, take that to the bank. Take it to the bank and then buy yourself an RV. There you go.
I didn't even know my mom listened to your show. Now, it's not an RV. It is very specifically a van, what we were talking about. So I want to hear what you guys have to say about hashtag van life. So with flights and cruises canceled due to the pandemic, a lot of Americans were road tripping this past year, and the van life movement is exploding. So these are luxury vans that are kitted out with kitchens and beds. But if you want to buy one, you're not going to be able to this summer.
Sales inquiries are up. I think at the end of this month, it'll be 300% as compared to last year, which is crazy, honestly.
So what's the wait time right now?
Looking at a finished van around November.
That's Nick Thoman. He's director of sales for Beartooth Van Works in Montana. I also spoke with a bigger company called Storyteller Overland. They are also booked out 10 to 14 months. But the good news is they're building more vans for next year. But these vans are very expensive. So Beartooth charges between $100,000 and $200,000 for the build out. That is not including the van. You have to provide your own van in addition to that. And then Storyteller offers three different styles of vans that are between $100,000 and $200,000 as well. So for those reasons, Seattle's Brian Mills decided to build his own van for 50% less than that. But the problem is it's even hard to buy the shell of the van right now.
I initially limited my search to the West Coast, and there wasn't a single dealer in any of those states that had the van that I was looking for, which was a very popular van. And so I ended up buying the van in Chicago and having it shipped out here because they were the first dealer from Seattle moving eastward that had the van that I was looking for.
And then there are the parts. So, for example, his van didn't come with windows. So he puts in the order for windows. They took 3 months. Things kind of just come when they come months later. So even if you need to do one thing to the van, you can't do it yet because you're waiting for this part. But in the end, it will be wonderful, because what these people seek is freedom. If a campsite is full, you can park a van on BLM land. You can be self-contained. And right now, with a lot of people working from home, you can take your job on the road.
The van will be equipped with power, so I can plug in my laptop. It will have Wi-Fi, and I can basically do all of my work from anywhere in the United States.
And Nick from Beartooth says that's a very common mindset.
It tends to be the biggest part of people's want to get into a van as opposed to a traditional RV. It's just the off-grid and kind of go anywhere aspect of it. Traveling in a van is a lot easier than an RV. They look really big, but at the end of the day, it's about the same length as a pickup truck, at least wheelbase-wise. So they're really easy to drive, and I think people are drawn to that as opposed to, you know, going with a crazy Class A or Class C kind of RV.
So a couple years ago, I took a vacation to New Zealand and spent 3 weeks in a van and completely fell in love with it. It is so fun, and it's novel. And, you know, as long as you don't want to kill the person that you're in that small space with, I think that it's a really, really, really fun way to travel. I used to think that people who didn't camp in a tent were like losers, basically. But now that I slept in the van, I never want to sleep on the ground ever again. I want to sleep on a comfy bed inside of a van.
So this is...
Wait, stop the presses, Tom. That's huge, Rachel.
No more tents for Rach?
I would do this... No more tents. I would do this for 6 months. I would love to take a big, long van trip. It is so fun. But I will say New Zealand, the country is kind of built for it differently than the U.S. Like, their van parks are for travelers. They're in beautiful places. There are places to wash your clothes. Whereas in the U.S., it tends to be these RV parks where people live, and it has kind of a different vibe and atmosphere.
Okay. I've got lots of questions, John. Do you want to jump in first, or you want to let me go?
Well, you do have lots of questions. We have 2 minutes.
I know. So I want to make sure that you get whatever question you in, and I'll just pepper her with as many as I can get in.
Rachel wanting to do this for 6 months, and people wanting to have a... Now, they live in the van, or have they quit everything and they're just traveling around?
It's traveling. People tend to have a home as well. So this is definitely something for people who can afford to spend, you know, over $100,000 for a toy.
Wow.
All right. Thank you. No further questions.
It's true, though. Like, most people aren't living in them full time. There's a small number of people who do that.
Okay. So, yeah, the first thing, when I first heard you were going to do this, I thought immediately of the surprisingly front runner for the best Oscar, best picture Oscar this year, is a movie called Nomadland. These people are not doing it for fun. They're doing it because they've lost their homes, and this is the one thing they're hanging on to, and they all kind of move in caravans. This has nothing to do with this kind of van life that you're talking about, it sounds like, correct?
No, and there's kind of like these jokes now amongst people, because remember the old Saturday Night Live Chris Farley sketch, living in a van by the river?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what's kind of funny about this, is like, these people want to live in a van down by the river. This doesn't have to do with not being able to afford a home. It's luxury camping is basically what it is. And yeah, I wouldn't be able to afford to buy my own van. I mean, this is like out of my means.
Hold on.
But
our
you
bell,
can also
our
rent
bell.
Them.
Our yeah. bell, you, Jacob is sitting right there.
Mm-hmm.
And he is Mr. Van Man. He bought a van.
I know.
And there's a sink in the back, and there's a weird mess.
Fancy
yeah.
Inside.
What?
It's not fancy though inside, is it?
Like, no. I mean,
Jacob, you didn't even really want to live in it.
I was gonna say yes. I was gonna say the same thing, but now you saying it, Rachel, makes it hurt my feelings somehow. No, it's certainly not as nice as the ones Rachel is talking about. And yeah, that's to some extent the reason I wasn't really able to live in it the way that I wanted to. Also, With the pandemic, a lot of the places I expected to spend most of my time, which were like restaurants and bars, those all closed down. And so I ended up moving in with
my
girlfriend.
Hold on a second. What do you need other than a mattress in the van? Said you couldn't live in it.
Right. I mean, it does not have a real bathroom. So there's some Gatorade bottles that have been used for
you're a guy. Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
I mean, I still would have
But what
liked
about
to use...
the other kind of bathroom? That guys and girls have to share. Go ahead.
No, that's basically
I'm just saying a bottle doesn't help everything.
Right. Oh, right, that kind of bathroom.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Oh, we're talking around me. I see. Why don't you just bring it right out? Curly doesn't have a toilet. Go ahead, say it.
You don't?
Say it.
You don't have a toilet?
He doesn't need one.
No, I don't have a toilet.
But
wow,
well, how is
I didn't
it not,
know that.
How is it not an RV? I still understand. Living in an RV and living in a van, how are they different?
They're different structurally. So RVs are huge. A van is the size of a van, so there's way less space. There tends not to be the plumbing. Like you can have a bathroom, but you know, usually it's like a compostable toilet. So yeah, it's a pretty different situation. It's
okay,
much
so a luxury van sounds to me like an RV. That's all I'm suggesting.
Well, no, just that the inside is nice. But, for example, Brian in that story, he got a Mercedes Sprinter, which are those Amazon delivery vans. So if you can imagine the difference between that and a huge RV that you see trucking down the highway.
Okay. Oh, great. Yeah. Excellent. Okay. Good job. Now I understand.
Thanks, Arnold.
Yeah. Thank you.
And let the
good.
Record. It's Jacob. I can't poop out. Thanks, Arbell. Here we go. Bucky's Auto Service Center, 16 locations. They've been around for 51 years. That's 50. Happy birthday to Bucky's Auto Service Centers. Still time to shop. Get the guys and gals something special there because they're celebrating. They've been around since 1970. That's a good long time. Fixing cars. Fixing your car. Bucky's Auto Service Centers, Tom. How do you feel about that? 51 years. It's going to make you feel good, all tingly.
It makes me realize how long we've been on the air with them. Because I think it started out there for 48 years. And now it's 51 years.
Do the math.
Like watching your kids grow up.
Yeah, just let it wash all over you. All right, let's see. By the way, you snuck that Cars or Kids spot in there. Thank you very much for that. People are really enjoying it, I'm sure. Volkswagen has had to apologize. This is a stupid thing they came up with. They just said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to change because we're so connected to the idea of going electric. We're going to change there's Volts, as in Volt, like a voltage wagon, instead of Volts, which means Volkswagen, or people, Volt. And they sent that out, and they said, oh, no, everybody, that was a mistake. It was an April Fool's thing, but now they have a lot of problems. They have to apologize to a bunch of people because misinformation is such a big deal. Plus, they also ran into a little bit of trouble because the stock went up. Complicated story. Hopefully they fire this marketing department.
They are in a lot of trouble in a lot of ways, and yet in the end, it may all have been to the positive for Volkswagen. That's the danger, some ethics people say, of the success of these kinds of things. So, yes, going with Volkswagen, they made this announcement. They went to the trouble of putting out an official press release a few days before April Fool's. And where they really got into trouble by journalistic standards is, respectable institutions like Wall Street Journal and Washington Post and USA Today, they contacted the Volkswagen people and says, is this true? Is this a joke? Or is this? And they said, no, this is straight. There you get a press release. And if they had said maybe like no comment, but to actually talk to your business, journalist sources and say, no, this is not an April Fool's joke when it was, that raises all sorts of ethical concerns. They say, especially for Volkswagen, which 3 years ago had to admit to a $30 billion penalty lie that they said about how they kept track of their emissions or something. So that this is it's a dangerous game to play. That coupled with the fact that now securities, SEC FCC might be looking at them. We don't know if this is official or not, because they're on news of this, because normally it's seen as a positive news bump if you're going to go electric, and like General Motors and all that has said that it's a boost in your stock. It went up 5% in a single day. Then it turns out it wasn't the case. They're saying that's an unfair manipulation of stocks. They might be getting in trouble for that. But as they say, the company said, we've gotten tons of buzz, and we love the fact that people take us so seriously that they, some of them are upset. We're sorry we upset you, but I'm afraid they may feel like, hey, we pulled it off. Unless they get a ding by the Securities Commission, they may try it again.
Yeah, I can't imagine that they're not going to get their at least their wrists slapped on this one.
You think
so? Because
the
stock did go up, and then it crashed back down the next day. You could put out a press release like that. People then buy on that, and then they realize, oh, no, that was just a joke. So, I don't know if it's going to – that Cars for Kids spot, I'm assuming that's running now. I don't know if that's going to – I'm checking the stock to see where it is for that. And it's
certainly, they wouldn't go to all that trouble just for a one day off.
No, especially that kid. Huh? The B-side of that album, that kid, he's got an extended dance version. Sean's going to play that one for us next break.
We always wondered what it would sound like to be sung to Happy Birthday, and now we know.
Yeah, and now we know. Thank you. Tracy Taylor?